Macmillan Audio presents A Rip Through Time by Kelly Armstrong. Read for you by Kate Hanford. Author's note. Welcome to 1869 Scotland, as written by a 2021 Canadian. Yep, I am not exactly the obvious writer for such a story, which is why my narrator, Mallory, is also a 21st century Canadian. That said, I did want to present the time period as accurately as I could, within the limitations of available data, contemporary interpretations of that data, and my admittedly modern perspective. If you share my interest in this time period, you'll find both a selected and more complete bibliography on my website. The selected version is primarily books written for a general audience, while the complete includes scholarly articles and primary sources. In cases where the primary sources differed from the secondary sources, I initially chose to follow the primary sources. However, if my early readers flagged any of those choices as seeming incorrect, I opted for the better-known variation found in secondary sources. This is a novel of historical fiction, after all. On the subject of fictional license, readers familiar with Edinburgh will note that there is no Robert Street, where I've placed Gray's townhouse. This is intentional. Also, in 1869, the Edinburgh police surgeon was Henry Littlejohn, who held that post during a long and storied career where he did memorable work in forensic science. Let's just say that Gray and MacReady would have much preferred Littlejohn to my fictional police surgeon, but that would have made for a very different story. Again, this is a work of fiction, written by an enthusiastic amateur history buff who must accept that she will make mistakes and hopes they'll be forgiven. If readers wish to point out errors, well-intended constructive corrections with academic source links are always appreciated. Chapter 1. My grandmother is dying, and I am getting coffee. I can tell myself that I'm treating the hospice nurses. I can tell myself that Nan is sleeping, and I can't do anything right now. I can tell myself that even if she woke, she would never begrudge me a 15-minute break. It doesn't matter. I crossed an ocean to be at her side for her final days, and instead I'm standing in an Edinburgh coffee shop, ordering lattes and chais as if it's just another mid-afternoon caffeine break. As if the doctor hadn't told me, 30 minutes ago, that the person I love most in the world will be dead before the weekend. The shop is overcrowded and understaffed, tempers fraying, people shifting and sniping, and I want to scream at them all to shut up and be glad for a day where a 5-minute wait is the worst thing that will happen. Instead, I'm on the phone to my mom, hunched over for some modicum of privacy. In the midst of this excruciatingly banal chaos, I am telling my mother that unless she can get here in the next 3 days, she will never see her own mother again. I want to step outside, but I've already placed my order. I want to say to hell with it and reorder elsewhere, but I left my wallet in the hospice and the 10-pound note I brought is now reduced to spare change. I want to tell Mom I'll call her back, but she's on a brief recess from court. I want so many goddamn things right now. If wishes were horses. I hear Nan saying that, and with a blink, the coffee shop glistens behind a gauze of tears. Focus, Mallory. Do not lose it. Not here. Not now. I will do everything I can to get there, Mom says. If I can't, your dad will. Dad won't want you to be alone at home if... when... I can't finish that line. Cannot. Her voice drops to a whisper, as if I'm not the only one having this very private conversation in a public place. We don't want you to be alone there either, Mal. I'm not. I'm with Nan. She inhales. And I am so, so glad.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?